Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Run for World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking with Joe French about barefoot running and PTSD.
Amongst many other things.
Yes, indeed.
Mountaineering. Adventure.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. I mean, it's a great interview, I think, and that's mainly down to him, not that we didn't ask the right questions, but because we always do.
Yeah, I mean, we'll take like, I'd say 20% of the credit.
Yeah, okay.
Is that fair?
Yeah, that's high, isn't it?
Yeah. 10% each.
So, yeah, oh, okay, yeah, fine, yeah, 10% each, 10% each. Look, the big news is, the word on the street, the word on Instagram is that there's a new running crew in town. Tell us.
It is... I don't want to sort of like speak too much about it in case the sort of, you know, the
sponsors and
the sponsor,
stuff.
Everyone comes running in straight, yeah. You know, too quickly and we get overwhelmed with interest. But I did my marathon.
What, 27 miler?
Whatever it was. Yeah, my ultra.
Ultra, sure.
It was a marathon. Yeah. Well, actually, yeah. It really was. Like when I,
an ultra on the South.
When I looked at the watch, I was just like, no, I can't. even though they described it as the long route, it was just a marathon. But anyway, on the South Downs, which, side note, was beautiful. We had the best weather and it looked fantastic and delivered on the day. My performance didn't quite deliver, but I had a lovely day out anyway.
Yeah.
But I digress, because what I'm getting to is I'm now, I would say, I'm a co-founder and a member of East London's new most elite running crew.
Right.
It's called the Dog Pack.
It's a brilliant name.
It's cool. Oh, no. It was going to be called Five Tired Old Dads. But it didn't quite roll off the tongue.
That could be the subtitle, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could be. But yeah, we're just, you know, brands get in touch. We're just open to opportunity now. We're all pretty cool. Yeah, and so that was, no, it was really, I'm jesting about, it was nice to go and consistently run with some people that I've run with and like we all got on. And we all ran very different races on the day.
Yeah.
Like James went off and did very, very well. He could have done better. He went the wrong way for a bit.
Okay, yeah.
And he still got fourth, so that was good. Okay. Could have got third. Sorry, James. And then everyone else sort of like split up and had their own race, but then we all gathered at the end, and it was all, you know, it was great. It was good.
Was the Dog Pack some...
I love this, the Dog Pack.
Was it founded after the race?
No, it's been around for a little bit.
Yeah.
So, I actually don't know. This is... No, I'm trying to actually remember like when this nonsense began.
When you see each other out there, do you do any kind of dog...
Oh, what, yeah, run hard, bark harder. That's the sort of, you know...
Okay.
Yeah, I know. We were just making light of the whole situation.
Okay,
with, like,
yeah.
Everyone, if you run with like the same people more than three times, does that effectively make you...
You're a crew, aren't you?
You're a crew, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So then you have a name, you get some T-shirts made, and you sign up to every single race with that name, which you've done.
Yeah.
So we've got another race in the bag.
This is how it starts.
I think it is. It starts off as a joke, and then you find yourself... Like, you know, it's being sponsored by Lurpak and then away you go.
Yeah, and it's tattoos next, isn't it? It's a slippery slope down to tattoos, Ben. Be careful. That's what I say. Be careful.
But, I mean, I think more importantly, it was, you know, it's a good race. And I feel now with your race coming up.
Yes.
Have you got a crew that you're going to do this with?
Well,
it seems like there's a lot of people doing it that you know.
Oh, there's loads of people doing it, yeah. So there's Kate Cart's doing it from Runner's World.
Yeah.
And there's loads of good runners in... you know, sort of Surrey League will do it. So there'll be lots of people who will be breaking the hour for 10 miles. I'm unlikely to be among them. I think I've just got to come to that realisation, but it was a punchy target, but I think realistically, I've got to be happy with like 103 something.
I mean, when you talk about like trying to get to a time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And every second counts and that sort of
Yeah, it's like quite a long way from doing it under an hour.
Yeah, but it's still not though, is it?
it's not like, no, it's a time, and like, I've only ever run 102 before, so I feel like I just want to get back in the bracket of, you know what it's like, where it's like, I want to get back to being kind of as fit close. as I've been.
Yeah, yeah.
And then maybe it's the next race after that, or
yeah, yeah.
just to feel like in the ballpark again. So I think that's more probably more what this is going
to
be.
I think that that's, you've got to have, well, certainly I feel like the, when life patterns change and you like have different responsibilities and there's things
yeah,
when
yeah.
you've done old you running versus new you running in terms yeah. of like kids and life and jobs and being older and more tired and all that sort of stuff, you kind of need that extra buffer event to be actually to like get back, whereas before
yeah,
you could
totally.
Have gone like, oh, I'm gonna do this and then that's it and that was the one goal.
Yeah, I think you just jump into races and yeah, be like yeah. oh yeah, and I didn't train that specifically, but I just think I was operating on an energy and fitness level that I have probably yet to quite get back to.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you do what you can, don't you? And maybe, I mean, maybe I'll surprise myself. Who knows?
It was, and the other thing was, like, my race didn't go, like, great, but I got to the end of it and it had really, like, reignited, like,
yeah,
a,
right.
a desire to get better at racing.
Yeah.
But unlike, and particularly, like, trail and marathon, which are, like, trail always for sure, love that,
yeah, yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Marathon's not my distance.
Yeah.
But for the first time I went, oh, if I, you know, if this had aligned and these bits have aligned and I'd, fitness was good, conditioning was terrible. So basically my body
okay.
was like,
yeah, yeah,
this
yeah.
up and down is not for you.
Yeah.
So if I got better at that, then I can see future me
for
could,
sure. yeah,
could
yeah,
be
yeah.
like, oh, and I was just a bit like, even though it wasn't like a race you'd go like, oh, I'm proud of the time, I still came off the back of it going, but that made me like running even more.
Yeah,
like,
great.
And that's,
yeah, yeah.
and that was more important, I think.
Totally.
When you sort of step into a world which isn't particularly familiar to you with running, be it
yeah.
far or fast or whatever it is you want to do, I think that if you can come out the other side and be like, oh, well, I didn't hate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can surprise you, can't it? Be like, yeah, actually, yeah. It turns out I want to do a lot more of these kind of long
yeah,
distance.
Yeah. If it's a beautiful sunny day and the weather, you know, and it's great and
yeah,
the
yeah,
course
yeah,
is beautiful,
yeah.
sign me up. I'm fine. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And I think that, because I guess I'm concentrating on the shorter stuff relatively.
Yeah.
And it can be, you can easily kind of psych yourself when you haven't raced kind of 5K, 10K or 10 mile for a while. There is a bit of intrepidation around like, oh God, because it's obviously going to be quite painful. You know, that's just that's the gig, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, and just a little bit of confidence from, or maybe lack of confidence from not racing super regularly, that I'm just like, I need to throw myself back into it. And then just what will be, and then I'll see. And maybe I'll feel a little bit more confident going into like, might try and do a late autumn half or something off the back of it.
Nice.
That kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Mate, this is it.
There you go.
You can be in the dog pack, mate.
Quick barefoot running chat, because we are going to go on to it with Joe French. I've dabbled. Have you ever dabbled in barefoot running?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've done... I haven't owned like a pair of Vibram, five fingers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, did I?
You probably did.
I probably had a pair. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've got some Vivos, which I love walking around in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I've got like the walking boots and, well, I did have the walking boots, RIP walking boots, but they got used. They got used a lot. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, so... you say like if I'm on, you finish a session and you can run a bit on the grass.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
I might do a little bit of that now and again.
Yeah.
But never the like fully, I think I'm probably more into the like the foot strength being very, very important to
running
properly.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Rather than the like must run everywhere barefoot thing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably my.
I mean, that's probably good, mate. I think as a walking tool, like barefoot shoes would make a lot of sense, I think.
I think it's sort of barefoot's good, zero drop. I think anything that kind of allows you to be a bit more flat.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
has the shoes, again, the premise being that there's more room in the shoe for your foot to naturally be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like people who are familiar with Ultra, they'll know that the foot shape is different, but they've got a bit more cushioning, whereas Vivo obviously are like, and other completely like barefoot shoes are like stripped back. But I mean, I've got some in the middle, and I do all of my skipping in them.
Okay, okay, yeah. I guess a lot of people go do gym work, don't they? And either like, I mean, even see some people in their bare feet lifting.
Yeah. So anything like that, I'll always be in like minimalist.
Yeah, me too. My weightlifting days.
But I'm unfortunately not, you know, Joe talks about running over like lovely lichen and moss soft ground, and that I don't have anywhere like that.
Yeah, it's so surface specific, isn't it?
Yeah,
barefoot running. I think it took me a little bit of a while to be like, to kind of piece those two things together. Like, I do believe that human beings ran and ran well without footwear.
Yeah.
But they didn't run on pavement. Like, in some ways, it's quite obvious, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's actually like, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it makes loads of sense on grass, you know.
Yeah, yeah. If you've got beautiful, soft pasture land.
Yeah, yeah.
Undisturbed by, like, messy humans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, there you go. Well, look, let's get Joe French, our guest of the week, on.
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
Our guest today is a celebrated filmmaker and climber. His new book, Out of Mind, investigates trauma and tragedy and how he was brought back to health through barefoot running. So, Joe French, welcome to the Runs Well podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Great to have you on. So, I've given you a short intro there, but can you tell us a little bit more about who you are in terms of maybe your climbing and filming background?
Yeah, so I'm a climber from the Peak District. Well, from Sheffield, I learned to climb in the Peak District and moved up to Scotland, to the Highlands where I live now, about almost 20 years ago, and kind of got used to climbing on bigger mountains here and bigger cliffs, which was quite a challenge. But as I was doing that, I got interested in the idea of making films about what I was doing up here as well. So I was working with some students in the local high school here in Fort William, and we got given a PD150 video camera to work with. And so I was working with the kids during the day and then going out and making films on the crags in the evenings. And that's where it all began, really. And I've gone from there to, I've been very lucky. I work as a producer director, and I work making mostly adventurous shows all around the world. I've done recreations of Shackleton's journey in Antarctica, a lot of filming on Everest, which I think we're probably going to talk about, and also some more kind of survival shows in deserts and jungles. And yeah, it's a fabulous way to make a living.
God, it sounds more interesting than our job, doesn't it, Ben?
God, it sounds better than running. I mean, this is... I'm intrigued to how running fitted in. It sounded like you were very busy. I was sort of, and all the things sounded far more interesting.
Yeah, well, actually, when I was in Sheffield, I did actually get into cross country running, and I remember our head teacher used to have us out at lunchtimes running up a very steep hill in Sheffield called Hunter House Road, and he made us do it just after lunch, so we always had a stitch. That's what I remember about that. But so running was always there as well.
That's another little document in the file of why people hate running from school. Yeah. It's just like a real like, and we did it with a stitch. Yeah, there we go. Rick mentioned your book, and part of the story within that book is you suffering from PTSD. I was just sort of wondering about the circumstances and events that led up to you having PTSD.
Well, yes. I mean, I've said that, you know, I do this adventurous filming, and it's a really incredible way of seeing the world and having an adventure and you know, making a living at the same time. And that's when it's all going well. Unfortunately, when it's not going so well, it can become quite a different thing. And I found myself caught up in the two biggest tragedies on Everest in consecutive years. Whilst I was filming in 2014, we were due to film a live wingsuit jump from the summit, which was going to be the first ever live broadcast of this. It was a huge production, and unfortunately there was a big collapse in the ice fall, which is a big glacier that guards the way into Everest, and a serac had carved off and collapsed in that. And unfortunately, 16 Sherpa were killed that year, which was an unbelievable tragedy and really hard to be part of and to comprehend. I was due to be filming the behind-the-scenes footage with them for the show when it occurred, and plans had changed at the very last minute, which meant that I wasn't there. So that was really quite difficult, and I came home from that, and my wife Julie was diagnosed with cancer, and we have a young family here, and that was obviously a big challenge. She's doing great now. She's made a recovery, but she needed an intensive treatment program throughout that. And then I returned in 2015 to Everest, and the earthquake hit. It was a huge earthquake hit Nepal. It was 7.8 magnitude, and about 9,000 people were killed across Nepal, and 22 people were killed at base camp that year. And I was very lucky to survive on that occasion. I was pretty much fully exposed to the avalanche. It landed right on our camp in the heart of base camp. And luckily, I wasn't in my tent because that was picked up and pretty much destroyed. But it meant that I was out on the glacier with nowhere to hide, and kind of experienced some kind of suffocation. And it was really quite a full on experience. For a while, I didn't really know if I was alive or dead, I guess, in some ways. And then I came out of that experience to find the devastation of base camp. And it was, like a bomb had exploded, really. And being there in a professional capacity, it was quite difficult to make those choices when I'd been in such a heightened state of fight or flight myself, to then navigate my way through the aftermath of it all and figure out what I should be filming, where I should be helping, and how I should be conducting myself in amongst it all. So that period of time for us, that was a year, pretty much a calendar year that all happened in. And it obviously had an impact on me, and my book Out of Mind is my exploration of how that affected me. I've never had a diagnosis of PTSD, and I guess I wrote the book as a kind of open question to myself, wondering if I had it. I was obviously haunted by what I went through when I came home and was experiencing nightmares and flashbacks and so on. And so that's when I started finding my way into the forest, really.
So you sort of mentioned there that you were sort of self-diagnosing the PTSD sort of stuff. What were the sort of symptoms? Obviously, you mentioned flashbacks, nightmares. I mean, it's in terms of a year of ordeal, like, it doesn't sound like you could have fitted any more in. It sounded absolutely like horrific. So you're obviously going to be fallout from that. What was the sort of thing that sort of led you to think, like, wow, I'm actually, something's not quite right here?
Well, I guess there wasn't one thing that I can point to say that was the trigger of it, almost. But I do wonder, and I've done quite a lot of reading into this, is that once you've experienced trauma and you carry on experiencing trauma, it kind of almost builds up and builds up and builds up. And maybe there's only so much you can actually take. And I sometimes wonder if almost like a stress receptor had kind of maybe blown a fuse or something. And it was, so I was analyzing everything I'd done in excruciating detail in the aftermath of it. And I was kind of caught in a kind of time warp, I guess, really. I was present here, but my mind was still back in Nepal. And I was just... it was almost like I'd become a time traveler. I was here, but I was there at the same time. And all these things did make me question what was going on. I remember I was cycling, went out for a bike ride one day, and just the noise of the wind in my ears as I was going down suddenly made me think that I was back and the avalanche was coming and the sound of the avalanche. So a kind of audio hallucination almost had triggered it. And once that happens, your brain doesn't necessarily realize that you're not still in the danger. So the flight or flight instinct is the same, and you still get a release of chemicals into your system, adrenaline, and it can actually feel like it's really happening, even though it's not at all. So I guess I did go and see a doctor, and he said it was likely I was experiencing post-traumatic stress. And if this continued, that's when it would cross the line to become post-traumatic stress disorder. And I didn't realize there was a difference between the two of them. So that's why I started really, really analyzing myself and writing about my experiences and trying to almost understand myself by writing it down, getting my thoughts out into the world so they weren't all just jumbled up in my head. And whilst I was doing that, I just said there, I started heading into the forest. And I found that I could only write for short periods of time, particularly with the more traumatic stuff. But what I did start to find was that when I went into the forest, it's very soft underfoot. It's very, very gentle mosses, green and all the sphagnums and pinks, and it's a very beautiful place. And one day I just decided to kind of take my shoes off and see how that felt. And that's where the barefoot began, really. I didn't really make a conscious decision to do it. But at the time I was writing about my trauma, and I was writing about the experiencing of discovering barefoot running all at the same time. So it became one project.
Why do you think that barefoot running, you found that more healing perhaps than I guess what we call shod running, like with shoes? Have you got any theory as to why you think it's been so helpful?
Yeah, I think barefoot running really helped me because it gave me a space between the thoughts that I was being plagued by, that were dominating my internal landscape. And by being barefoot and running, I was having to concentrate really, really hard on every single foot placement.
Mm.
The way my foot was landing, and even as I was midair in between foot strides, thinking about how I would land the next one. So this became a really intense sensation of flow that I would enter into. And along with that, I would focus my breathing. So I would get into a steady rhythm of breath, always just breathing through my nose when I was running. So, and that would almost moderate my cadence and my tempo with it. So I wasn't running to become completely out of breath and really push myself. And I was running to kind of maintain a steady rhythm of breath and a steady rhythm of foot. And the two combined really seemed to create this kind of magical space where I could just be completely in the moment, enjoying going through the forest and leave the world of trauma behind for a little while.
Amazing.
So I think that really, yeah, that was one of the magical elements. And also, when you're barefoot, you're kind of physically grounded as well, which I think is a really big thing. And I felt that when I was lost in the world of my psyche almost, I needed to come back down to earth, and actually getting my feet into the moss, into the mud, and feeling it was a really, really direct way of doing that.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Yeah. In my head, I'm just sort of, this is complete like amateur, like not even psychology, whatever, but I feel like all of the trauma that you experienced was very much nature at its most aggressive, and nature at its most sort of against you, whereas the barefoot feels like a very sort of symbiotic, peaceful kind of relationship. Do you think there's anything in that? Do you think that the sort of you were, you know, exposed to things that most people would never have experienced from a sort of me versus nature point of view, and the sort of the barefoot running allows you to sort of feel a bit more connected back to it?
Well, 100%. I mean, to have witnessed what I've witnessed and the really destructive force of nature and how terrible it can be from a human perspective. I mean, in a global perspective, it's just doing its thing. But for humans, we're obviously, you know, very susceptible. And what's going on now with the climate and everything, it's all connected. And to experience the full kind of horror, I don't know if that's the right word, of seeing a catastrophe like the avalanche at base camp was terrifying in one way, but also in some strange way, despite all the tragedy and horribleness, was quite incredible just to see exactly how small and insignificant we are. And when something like that happens, you really feel like we are just this kind of little species on this planet with, you know, these big events going on around us. So seeing it from its most destructive point of view, but then also seeing how it can help us. And actually, there's no separation between us. We are nature. And I think that we maybe sometimes think that nature is something over there that we need to go and connect with, but actually we are it. Okay. And the more we can feel connected to it, I think the certainly personally speaking, the more grounded and healthy I feel in my day to day, the more I'm around nature. So it can give us so much, but it can take away so much at the same time.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Did you have to get over any sort of self-conscious feelings with the Beth running? Because I think a lot of people might be intrigued but think, oh no, I'll look a little bit odd if I'm running around the park or running in the forest without any shoes.
Yeah, 100%. You feel like a weirdo. and some of the looks you get confirm that. They kind of look, give you a smile when you run past, and then they have a quick glance down, and you can see the quizzical look on their face. But I've kind of,
because you're doing this in Scotland, right? You're doing this like wet and windy Scotland, Joe. Right? It's not like you're on like Santa Monica or something running along. It's like it's pretty wild where you are, isn't it?
Exactly. Yes. It's yeah. And I'll do it all year round as well. I find I've even managed to kind of do it, you know, when the snow's there a bit. Actually, in the forest, because the canopy stops a lot of the snow coming in, you can kind of get away with it. So the ground's really cold underfoot, but as long as you're moving quickly, you can kind of just about get away with it. But yes, it is. I mean, it certainly isn't. I would say a mainstream sport.
Yeah.
But I also do a lot of running in the mountains as well. And when I run in the mountains, I tend to wear shoes and trainers and do that. So But interestingly, once I started running barefoot, that I was in my mid to late 30s. It was about 8-9 years ago now. And I actually had a torn meniscus in both my knees just from all the film work and carrying equipment around in the mountains. And actually running in trainers had become impossible for me.
Right.
I could just about plod along kind of going up hills and, you know, maintain myself that way. But as soon as I started coming downhills, I would just be in excruciating pain in my knees. But what I've discovered since I've been running barefoot is that now everything seems to have strengthened and solidified. And when I run now, I feel like I'm running on solid foundations. My arches in my feet have kind of risen, and the soles of my feet are really tough. And I can actually run now more in the mountains in my 40s than I could in my 30s. And that is since I've been having a period of running barefoot. So whether there's something in that, I don't know, but I've certainly experienced the benefits in that way.
Very interesting, yeah.
It's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, the body naturally protects itself whenever you move barefoot. So you will fundamentally strengthen. There's a sort of, you know, there's the idea of barefoot motion means that your body will naturally protect itself, which means you'll run more efficiently. So whereas before, trainers offer a small sort of gap of, I don't know, you can run slightly sloppily, and the trainers
That's it. There are consequences to poor form, aren't there, barefoot running?
I'm intrigued though. Like, at what percentage are you doing? Is it sort of a every run that you go to the forest is now barefoot, or is it always just been? Because I think people have always been slightly cynical about barefoot and injury, and because there are people who just launch straight into it and run every single run barefoot and just destroy themselves. So I'm just sort of interested. Did you sort of kick the shoes off and go for like a mile and then stop, or how did you sort of work it into your life, or did it just sort of happen and it's continued to happen?
Well, I think that the bare feet, it's about the environment. So I'm not running down roads barefoot. I'm not running on hard surfaces. I'm running on really soft ground. So I think that it's very easy to say you run barefoot and that's the way to do it. But actually, I think it's more complex than that. I think that different environments lend themselves to different things. So when I'm in the forest, I never wear trainers. Now I've done it barefoot for so long, it just feels wrong being in there in trainers. And because I've run in there so much, I've almost mapped it out in my head. So in the same way as I used to climb on rocks, and I used to remember the moves and think about them at night and imagine them, I can now remember the moves I've got to make as I'm running through the forest. So to do it in trainers now doesn't feel right. But that said, I don't always want to run barefoot, and it depends what kind of mood I'm in. I guess if I wanted to be in that kind of meditative state of flow, then the barefoot and the breathing definitely. But sometimes I just want to go for a run in the mountains and let my mind wander and think and come up with ideas and daydream and stuff. So I guess running gives you all these different options about how you want to approach it and what you experience while you're doing it.
Yeah. You're also getting in cold water, Joe, aren't you? You're kind of can be found in the locks now and again. Can you briefly tell us about that? Because I think it's an area that probably with like Wim Hof and all this sort of stuff, that it's become slightly more into the mainstream, and people are kind of thinking, is there anything in getting in very cold water? What's been your experience of that? And maybe in terms of like helping you with deal with trauma as well.
Yeah, well, the cold water has gone completely hand in hand with the barefoot running, and I think the two activities they're very similar in a way, but very different. With the barefoot running, it's all about motion and movement, but with the cold water, for me, it is about immersing myself in the water and trying to find stillness in the cold. And luckily, in the forest here, there's this lochan, which I became really obsessed with, kind of finding the most direct way to it. And every time I'd reach it, I would go in. It didn't matter if it was sunny, if it was raining, if it was snowing. I always made myself go in. And the goal wasn't to swim about in it at all. It was just to stand. It was just stand as still as I could with my chin just above out of the water and focus on my breath. And there I could feel the ice and fire on my skin and the sensations. And again, what that did was it created a little space between me and my thoughts that were troubling me. And the more I kind of focused on my breath and kept my eyes closed, maybe just focusing on the point just between your eyes and just really settling there. And you can hear all the voices saying, get out, it's cold, what are you doing? Like, you know, but if you can just switch off from them, you find that there's another space you can enter into. And that space is one of awareness. And so once you become aware that these thoughts are happening, but you are not actually these thoughts, they're going to come and go like the clouds across the sky. Sometimes it's stormy, sometimes it's clear, so, you know, but thoughts, they will always come and go. And I guess with this PTSD, I have had a very acute experience of what stress is and almost like an overload of stress. But because of this, it's helped me to realize what stress is and, you know, whether it's post-traumatic stress or just normal everyday stresses that everybody feels, we can still have the similar kind of reactions where we go into kind of thought spirals and it's very hard to separate. So for me, finding the cold water and the barefoot running was very, very helpful to overcome that. And now it's just helpful to overcome everyday stresses as well. I think there isn't a point where I'm going to get to and say, right, that's all over and done with. I'm completely healed now. I think it's an ongoing process. And the more that you can practice getting into these states, I think the more helpful it is.
Yeah.
How about the return then for you? What was the sort of getting yourself feeling more secure in your sort of management of the stress and the stresses in life? How have you returned to climbing and filming and big adventures and all those sorts of things? What was the sort of the point where you thought I could go back?
I've never stopped. Right. Throughout this whole period, I've maintained my career. I still work in television and go away on jobs. And so I did have a period after Everest where I didn't want to do anything. And actually, I ended up going back to Everest in 2016 to film another series. So I went 3 years in a row. Mm. And so going back to Everest was a really big deal. I was having to work at the time as well. So I was kind of having a mini breakdown as I was walking back into Everest, almost like I was walking back into a recurring nightmare I'd been having. But I was having to kind of dust the tears off and then start filming the groups as they'd arrive and do my interviews. Wow. So it was all quite full on. But actually, I went back again to Nepal this year as well. And I just went back as me, not as a producer, director or a cameraman. I just went back as me to see how I was. Mm. And that was very interesting as well. There were still a few tears.
Yeah, I imagine. I mean, this is the thing that most people wouldn't want to ever return. And that's why I ask, because it's, I guess, part of the healing and part of the management. But similarly with runners, I mean, I'm not a climber, so I'm just guessing. But once you have an association with an activity which sort of centers around your being almost as an identifier or as a something, you know, that you've found a real passion and a real life passion for, it's very hard to not want to continue to do that. And I guess it's a balance between how much something affects you and how much you want to continue doing something.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard when that crosses over into your professional life as well, I guess, as well. I started out as a climber and then became a filmmaker after that. And so climbing is kind of fundamentally part of who I am. So to turn my back on it is kind of impossible, I think. It's such part of my fabric. But since I've become a father and husband, and we have all this stuff going on, it's very hard to just go out climbing the whole time because it's quite time demanding. So yeah. Running is a great way of entering the similar states of flow and mindset, but being able to do it in an hour or a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Especially where we live up here in Scotland, you know, I can run up and, you know, to the top of Ben Nevis, you know, from my house if I want to. I mean, we're just kind of spoilt for choice about where to go. So, going back was hard, but I've kind of got to make peace with the mountains because the mountains are part of me.
Yeah.
Hmm. I mean, that's a really good way of putting it. I mean, the book is fantastic, Joe. It's a really brilliant read. And I think anyone listening who, feels an affinity for what you're saying is really going to enjoy reading Out of Mind. If they want to get hold of it, what's the best way people can get hold of your book?
Well, it's being published by Sandstone Press, who are an imprint of Vertebrate Publishing in Sheffield. And they can find, if they Google Out of Mind, Joe French, they will find links to it all over the internet. You can buy it directly now from Vertebrate. And the official release date is the 28th of September. So I'm doing a launch here in Fort William then. But people are already buying it in Waterstones and other local bookshops now. So it's slightly ahead of schedule, but it's already out there. And the official launch is the 28th. So, Google Joe French, Out of Mind, and you'll find it no problem.
That's great. Joe, thanks so much for coming on the Runner's World podcast, talking about the amazing things that you've been through and the role that running's played in your recovery. It's absolutely great to talk to you, and we really appreciate you giving up the time to come on the podcast.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Joe French, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head to runnersworld.com/UK/podcast offer to get this exclusive listener offer. Please make sure that you subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. You can also subscribe to the magazine for more than just 3 issues. You can get like a whole year's worth of magazines arriving at your door. We're still one of the only magazines to make 12 issues a year.
Good for us.
Good for us, eh?
Yeah.
So, you know, you're really getting bang for your buck there. Actually going to get one every single month. It's great. Just subscribe to everything and you'll hear from us next week.
Okay, I have 2 new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.